Hour with Meg and Mel.
Magic.
Melanie, how are you? It's been 2 weeks, unfortunately. I didn't get to see you last week, and I did miss you.
I missed you, too. I did. I was like, oh, what's missing this week? Well, Meg.
it was weird to be away. Like, I was in Hong Kong last week, and my whole life was completely different.
How so?
Well, I did not have a routine. I was pretty jet-lagged while I was there. And I was living in a major city for a week, which I live very close to New York, and I've spent lots of time in New York. I stayed in a different part of Hong Kong than I did last time. So last time I stayed on the Kowloon Island side. And this time I stayed on Hong Kong Island, and I stayed in a part that pretty trendy. They call it Soho, and it's a cultural hub. I had Peruvian food for lunch one day. I had French food for dinner. There's like Mexican food. It is a true amalgamation of culture, and it's kind of a cool place because I guess it's not cool that it used to be a British colony, but it is cool in the way that it has like special laws within China because it was agreed upon when the British gave it back. I guess that it would be sort of a free market within China, and it's a cool place, and it still has a lot of British influence. There certainly was a whole bunch of British people there.
Really?
Yeah. So, and then things are written in English and in Chinese, which I find to be really cool.
Yes. Wow, it sounds like a pretty welcoming spot. What did you like most about it?
What I liked most about Hong Kong is that it felt like a really cool place. It's a big city, but yet they let old trees grow in certain spots and they build walls around them.
Oh, wow.
I have some cool pictures of a specific tree that I'm talking about. But so they sort of keep certain things and they build the city around it.
I like that, building around nature rather than over it. Allowing for green space to be available to the people and also to remind you of your heritage and, where you came from. We all came from the earth,
Yeah, for sure. And there was also really inexpensive public transit. It was super easy to get around.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I did go to a part of Hong Kong this time that I have never gone to. And it was like, it was like the seedy part. And it reminded me of Fremont Street in Las Vegas meets English Town Auction, if you've ever been.
I've never been to either one of those. And please do tell, elaborate.
Well, Fremont Street is old Las Vegas, and it is very much sort of still has that essence where it's sort of gritty and people are drunk and there's hookers and, I should say sex workers. Which, no problem, I'm not dissing anybody, but it was very much like, come upstairs for a hand job.
Wow.
And like vendors selling stuff.
And, wow.
Yeah. Interesting.
So the more things change, the more they stay the same, huh?
Yeah, I guess there is that. So what'd you do?
What did I do? Well, I lost my shit for a little while, and then I got it back, and then I realized why I lost my shit, and then I worked and I gave people some good shit. It was a lot of shit this week. I did a lot of good work, did some amazing readings, met some amazing people. I did some writing. I got to rest a little bit. There was just a lot. There was a lot of information. I received a lot of information this week. Yeah. So what do you want me to elaborate on?
I don't know. I guess for me, this week has been super overwhelming because when I got back from Hong Kong, we cleaned out Lisa, my partner, her parents' house because her stepmother passed and her dad is now in a nursing home. And now our house is like filled with junk. And I feel like my head is filled with junk and not junk. And I'm saying junk because I'm frustrated with the stuff, but other people's stuff, which is good, but also the energy is sort of throwing me off, if that makes sense. And I am missing a routine, and I feel like sort of in a stuck place right now, and I feel a little chaotic. So that's how I'm feeling right now. So after your week, how are you feeling?
Well, my week, I'm feeling pretty settled at this point. I'm feeling very peaceful. I'm feeling spiritually AF. And, to your point, which is something that, you know, I've been thinking about. We are at the age where our parents, our guardians, have aged to a point where we have to take measures like putting them in a place or helping our partners do that, or we have to deal with what they've left behind. And that's not an easy thing to do. I actually just came from my friend's house. She had to hospitalize her father twice. Oh. He's got dementia and Alzheimer's. He doesn't know what's going on, so he can be aggressive. And she moved into his house. She still hasn't unpacked. There's stuff that's been destroyed in the house. And, you know, feeling like you don't have a routine that makes you feel your best and that, you know, you're surrounded by a bunch of stuff is totally not, you know, it's not uncommon. Even if it's not yours directly, the energy that it does create for those around you is real, is real. And so what I did is, because I have some distance from it, I was able to go in and separate things, put them in their proper place and straighten things up. And so definitely getting a third party in, if it's too much, to kind of have a more objective view on things is helpful. We can't be afraid of asking for help, because this chapter of our loved ones' lives, whether you're on the caretaking end or whether you're the one who needs care, is very profound. A lot of stuff comes up. And so I'm not surprised that you feel unsettled. I mean, especially coming from a whole nother time zone, a whole nother culture, to then be plopped into this, where your safe place, your home, is in disarray, and your partner is dealing with a lot of serious emotions, some that you've already gone through, and some, and so you have to relive it, and some that are new. So it's not surprising. So what I've learned is that, and especially with my troubles, is that the more we fight it, the more crazy it gets. So you're a little crazy this week. You know, there were parts of your week where you were not psycho babble, like crazy girl. I know that. And yeah, the crazy is always more profound because it stinks more and it's louder. But there were parts of your week when you were sane, Meg. But there's also parts of your week where you felt crazy, a little detached and unhinged because things were happening. And that's okay, too. Next week is not going to be the same. Tomorrow's not going to be the same.
Yeah, you're really putting your therapist hat on right now, I feel like.
Oh, shit, I'm not a therapist.
You sound like.
You know, this is the, you're like the third person who said that to me today. This woman, I had a client today, and I'm doing her reading and everything. She's like, oh my God, I want you to be my therapist. I'm like, no, I'm not accepting liability for any of that shit. You need to, you know, get a real therapist. But, it's okay. You can't fight it. You know, I've noticed that the fight is when all the evil shit inside me likes to come out and hurt me further. And it's like, you know, in some self-help groups, they talk about surrender. And it's like, you don't necessarily have to surrender if that word is like abhorrent to you. But you can you can choose not to fight.
Surrender, acceptance. These are words that I have not been able to deal with.
So you can just choose not to engage.
Yeah.
You know, that's some best self, you know, millennial talk. Not that you're a millennial, but, you know, are you a millennial? Oh, my God. I'm a Gen Z.
I'm a Gen Xer. I do prefer Gen Xers, and I do identify as a Gen Xer.
Because we're so cool.
Technically, I am a millennial.
All right. Well, we won't tell anybody except on this podcast.
Yeah. It's okay. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Would you like me to share about my unhinged?
Yeah, I would love for you to tell me about your unhinged.
It's actually quite profound, and I wrote a blog about it, and I'm in the last stage of editing it. I even made a little image to go along with it. So I had a financial situation. I think I mentioned it to you. Did I mention it to you?
Mm-hmm.
And after this financial craziness, I had a Squid Game version of tug of war going on inside my body, inside my mind, inside of my heart, inside of everything. So the one side was very intellectual, like, all right, your bank account's zero. You have cash. You have this. You're fine. You got money coming in like big fucking whoop. You're fine. You've dealt with this before. But my body and my guts wanted to be like, how could you do this? You loser. You're terrible. Nobody wants to be with you. See, this is why you don't deserve to have anybody or be with anybody or do anything. You're just trash. You're just this trash and you're just, you deserve to be discarded and you're never going to have anything. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. What's going on here? And it was persistent. Trying to drag my brain into this place of, yeah, see, Melanie, we're right. See, yeah, we're right. You're wrong. You're terrible. And so, you know, I chose not to fight with it. And I said what I tell my clients. I said, what am I supposed to learn from this? And I spent some time being quiet. I spent some time talking to friends about it. And it happened on Friday night. And so I got in there early and I was just kind of like, you know, just sitting, watching the train, waiting. And I realized that I had created a spiritual teratoma.
What's a teratoma?
A teratoma, thank you for asking, is a tumor. It's a tumor that is made from germ cells. Now, germ cells is an abbreviation of germination cells, and germination cells are in our reproductive system. And so these cells from our reproductive system, they're able to germinate into whatever they need to be. And so for some reason, these cells come together to create a mass and they generate into whatever they need to be or want to be, like teeth and organs.
Like stem cells almost? Or
I did not go deeper to discover the difference between germ cells and stem cells. I think that there is a distinct difference between the two. I don't know what it is. I didn't go there, but I should.
No,
I should. It would be nice to know.
But this is very interesting. Keep going.
So that's why teratomas can have things like hair and teeth and tissue from other organs like cardiac tissue, pulmonary tissue, and it's a mass. Typically, teratomas are just there and you don't really notice them until they start causing problems. So like if you've got like a mass like in your ovarian, like, or your fallopian tube, and it's blocking stuff, and it's, you know, and you're like, oh, wait, what's this problem? Oh, you have a mass here. Oh, what is it? It's a teratoma.
And it has hair and teeth.
And it could have hair. No, it could have hair and teeth. Yes, yes. And typically, I think they don't notice it until they excise it. So most of them have to be surgically removed. There's no passing a teratoma organically. And they can either be benign or malignant. And so I discovered that I had a spiritual teratoma because there were some energies that I was operating with that were not of me. So this thing inside me of my tissue, but was not me of my spirit, of me, of my personality, me of my essence, me of my psyche. It felt like a foreign body. And I've had this foreign body since I was born, this spiritual foreign body. It's always been a lump here. Mm-hmm. And I inherited it from my biological mother. So when we think about how energy cannot be created or destroyed and it's just transmuted, and we identify that thought forms are energy, it led me to consider what were some of the thought forms my biological mother was thinking when she found out she was pregnant with me. And so I know my biological mother now. Getting answers from her is like pulling teeth, but teratoma teeth. But
can I ask a question?
Of course.
Were you adopted?
Yes, I'm adopted. Yes, I'm adopted. And so, you know, I put myself in her position. At age 16, she had me, but I have an older brother who she had at age 15. She didn't have her mother and father. They were already dead and gone. She was raised by her aunt, but she was pretty much free to do whatever she wanted to do. And she used drugs and alcohol to cope with her life. She also does not remember or does not know who my father is. She also didn't really see me when I was born, and I was given up directly to care. So one can speculate that the thoughts surrounding pregnancy for her were not those typical of a woman we would think who's expecting. I wonder how much joy she felt. I wonder how she had to battle the decision of abortion or not. I wonder how much she beat up on herself for ending up pregnant again. I wonder how much she wished that she could be pushed down the stairs, or that she could, you know, spontaneous pass this mass that was going to become a human. I wonder how much she tried to hide it. I wonder how much she felt guilt and shame and blame from people who knew she was pregnant. I wonder how much she felt ostracized and separate and other. Mm-hmm. All those thoughts that she had. If energy cannot be created or destroyed and thought forms are energy, where did they go? Where did that energy go? So I, in my meditation, discovered that the energy that my mother had surrounding my birth went into me as I'm germinating.
Yeah.
A spiritual germination of all of her thought forms ended up in me. And when I was born, this mass of yucky thoughts of not belonging, guilt and shame that I had no idea where it came from, you know, wanting to be, being abandoned, not being accepted, being trash, being garbage, all this stuff that I inherited before I even came out the womb. And, you know, this whole idea of inheriting energies is not uncommon. I mean, we talk about post-traumatic slave syndrome. We talk about generational trauma. We talk about inheriting drug and alcohol abuse. We talk about inheriting, you know, genetic diseases. So if we can inherit biological things, why can't we inherit energetic things as well?
I believe it. I believe that 100%.
So, you know, I feel pretty excited about this discovery. I don't know how unique it is, but I'm pretty excited that when I sat back and I asked them, you know, that I had done the footwork, that I had, you know, objectively looked at what I was dealing with, had done enough footwork in the past to identify what was happening, and then to be able to identify, wait, this is not me. How is this? So what was going on is that how was I experiencing such drastic responses? You know, like when I'm good, I'm great. And when I'm bad, I want to die. Kill me now. Mm-hmm. Get rid of me. I should have never been born. That's a pretty significant shift to me. And I'm medicated. So I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, you know, if I'm medicated already and I'm still feeling these drastic shifts, and it was like, wait a minute.
It's like pushing through that completely.
And it's like, this is not me. This is not Melanie. And I was like, guys, this, what is this? Because this is not how you made me. Mm-hmm. And they're like, this is what this is. You know how it always tickles in the back of your neck, Melanie, this is it, you know? And so what I asked them, I was like, so what are we going to do about that? And they were like, give it to us. And so right now my spiritual teratoma is in a glass case and I feel it. I still feel it, but I don't feel the effects of it so much. I feel the corners of the glass case. And it's like reminding me, like, that's not yours. Mm-hmm. No, when they want me to do something about it, they'll tell me. And so what they want me to do about it is keep talking about it. They want me to write about it. They want me to share about it. They want me to make images about it. They want me to put it online. They want me to do all sorts of things. So it loses its power. And so I can, you know, just kind of solidify in my mind and in my spirit that there are some things that cannot be you, and that's okay. And when the time is right, you will identify those things, and then you can lift them up for transmutation so you can be your truest self. So that was a really big, profound thing that happened to me last week. And, you know, it was also, I realized it also because, you know, the going back to this feeling of wanting to be thrown away is so deep for me, so deep. And it eclipses all the other indications that I have that I'm wanted and that I'm loved and I'm appreciated and I'm respected. And nothing like that should ever have more power than the good that I do, you know? So that's what had happened to me.
That's pretty profound.
Yeah, I know.
The level of spirituality that I am honestly awed by. Like, I don't know if you see me looking at you while you're telling me, but I am like, wow.
Yeah, you're totally staring at me. I'm like,
Yeah, because just your ascending spiritually so... Like, I can see you up there almost in my mind's eye, you know? Like, your spirit, you're building it, you're clean, like, you're
applying it. I'm dedicated to it.
Yeah.
I'm dedicated to it. And it's not a higher, for me, it's not a higher, it's not a lower thing. It's, I'm committed to becoming more familiar with who I am, what I am, and how I serve. Paul Selig really changed my life. He's a writer, and he has this book of knowledge, book of truth, book of knowing, book of... And so he channels Melchizedek, which is like a group of, like his spiritual team, like my spiritual team, his spiritual team. And he channels these messages from them, and they attune you as they speak these words, or you read the words, or if you listen to Paul, you're getting attuned while you listen to it. And I... in the beginning said that I'm going to go up the hill with Melchizedek and Paul and everybody, you know, I'm going to do this journey. And as I move into this jersey, I'm going to know who I am. I'm going to know what I am. And I'm going to know how I serve. And this is part of it.
I got to look this guy up.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. Yeah.
Happen to need a new book.
Yeah, and it's great to listen to because the sound waves of... So sound is very powerful. It can penetrate places where we won't go. And so just like a Reiki attunement, it's like you're getting a sound healing attunement when they bless you, when they say, okay, we're taking you to the next level now. They literally say, okay, Paul, we're going to take your readers, we're going to take your listeners to the next level now. And then they'll say certain words, and you can't help but kind of be like, oh, okay. Wow.
So before you leave, I have 2 credits on my Audible right now.
You don't need Audible. You just use your public library card. It's free on Hoopla.
Oh, I'll definitely get it on Hoopla.
Yeah.
Which book do I start with?
The great thing is that you don't really need to do them in order. I think the Book of Truth or Book of Wisdom is the first one. But I'm actually on the Book of Worth, and I stopped in the middle of it. And that's when you know that it was like, yeah. So I will go back to it and see, and just kind of.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. This shit ain't easy.
You have to sip it. You don't just drink it all up. You won't absorb it.
Yeah, and it's heavy lifting to get to know you. And here I am at 44. You know, getting to know me more. When I'd much rather distract myself with getting to know a man or a woman or a dog or a child, yeah, or anything else.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was just one of the amazing things that happened this weekend or this week.
That's extremely inspiring to me.
Oh.
It really is. I'm so happy that you shared that because, you know, of course I'm going to talk about myself because
that's what you're supposed to do, because all I do is talk about myself. So yes, you're supposed to talk about yourself.
It's like I struggle to be in my spiritual self, and I make decisions that I don't always like based on my physical self, my lower self. And like something like drinking is not something that I particularly like doing, so it's something I've made a choice that I don't want it in my life anymore, right? So, and that, it's all well and good, and it, you know, it works for me. And then I go to Hong Kong and I drink with my colleague, and the way that I drink isn't like, oh, I have one and I just have to keep going. That's not really how I am. But I'll have a drink, whatever, and then the next day I'll have a drink, and then the next day I have two drinks. And on that, the two drinks, because it's not just a beer, now it's two martinis, and I'm thinking thoughts and having fantasies and imagining things that are not from my higher self. It definitely is from my lower self. And when I'm back in my more, you know, sober body, I feel ashamed of those things, and it makes me not like myself, and it makes me depressed. And I just keep making decisions in my life that have to do with my physical self, even though I know better and I know that I want to be more spiritual. And I start the journey there, and then I pull myself back from it. And it's inspiring to me to hear your story and what you're going through spiritually, because it makes me want that in a way where I'm like, yeah, like that's something each and every single one of us can have. We can all know our higher selves. We can all attain that deeper spiritual level and make decisions from a place like that, or process things that you input into your mind from a place like that.
Thank you for sharing that with me. It's very heartening to know that you regard me like that. But I will tell you, I've been where you've been. Like, do you think I came to spirituality willingly? Do you think I came to, like, sobriety, which I have chosen to live a life of sobriety, willingly? Like, I came because I was in so much pain. Mm-hmm. And I was willing to entertain anything else. Like, after I entertained everything else, I was willing to entertain anything else so I wouldn't have to be in so much pain. And, you know, so there's nothing altruistic about it. It was all self-serving. So I could look at myself in the mirror, you know. But even then, when I was like, okay, I'm going to make that decision just for today, like, there were parts of it, and there still are parts of it, where I'm like, I want to talk smack about this chick. You know, I'm not trying to be all fucking spiritual. I'm talking smack.
No, but you are.
But that's a,
when you concentrate and you like meditate on certain things, and you, and no, and I mean, I know you have bad days. I know, like, your life isn't hunky dory and always in that spiritual place, but you care about it, like, in a way where you're willing to do work for it.
Well, because I care about it because it gave me the evidence. Mm-hmm. Because I was in so much pain, and I was like, well, show me the fucking magic. And so I developed a lot of my spirituality in a journey of recovery. And there was a point in my recovery where they're like, oh, you need to find a higher power. And I said to whoever was listening, yo, if you want me to fucking believe in you, you better show me the fucking magic. Show me the fucking magic. And so I got some evidence. Mm-hmm. And so it led me to a place where I could believe a little bit more. And so it's all step by step by step, you know, and minute by minute by minute. One thing I did have to realize is that I had a lot of fear about choosing to not drink and not do drugs. Like, I didn't know who I was going to be if I was that person. I knew I didn't like the person I was when I did it. Well, after I did it. Because when I did it, I felt like I was a fucking shit. I was so fucking awesome when I was a fucking drunk. Right? I loved it. But it was those days after, the hours after, you know, waking up in the bed after, that was like always such a like, oh my God, like it would really try to pull me back to suicide. And so there was, it was like, why am I going to choose this? This is not, you know, why do I want to choose recovery or being sober? I don't know what's going to happen. And it's too, I'll be a dork, you know, Gen Z's consistently do everything they can to not be a dork. So like, you know, I grappled with that too. But what I also knew is that I had a kernel of spirituality, and that was enough. That was sufficient unto the day. And so you see my spirituality and know that if you choose it, you can have a spirituality that worked for you as well. But the one you have is substantial.
Yeah. I think I'm learning about it more.
Exactly.
And I think it's changed over the years. Actually, in Musar, which is like an ethics practice in Judaism, mm-hmm. there's a concept called the Yetzer Hara, which means your evil inclination. Mm. It's like a choice away from good. It's mm-hmm. a step away from good. And then there's your Yetzer HaTov, which is your good inclination or inclination for good. And they say that the stronger Yetzer Hara, the higher your Yetzer HaTov, like your ability to do good. It's the opposite, you know,
yeah.
as such as, you know, above mm-hmm. is below or whatever the saying is.
Yeah.
But I always think of that. And it's just feeding that other thing, that other part of yourself. It's easy to do good for others. It's easy to do the right thing for other people. But for myself, I take the easy ways. It's easier for me to connect with a colleague if I act a certain way and behave a certain way.
That is so true.
Which then gets me to a place that I don't like of myself, mm-hmm. whether it be with that person or when I am just completely alone,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I get that. And, you know, the Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov, you know, what I've learned that to be is just your highest and truest self, your greatest good, mm-hmm. you know, or your lower self, you know. And Paul uses other language. Paul Selig uses other language, so it doesn't have that dichotomy, the inferior superior type of dichotomy, which I really appreciate. I can't really bring it to mind right now, but you know, there's this like, I think it's Native American, but it's like, which are you going to feed? Are you going to feed the hawk or are you going to feed the wolf? We've all got this raging thing inside us, right? Are you going to feed your bear or are you going to feed your wolf? You know, which one? Either way, it needs food. And it's got to live. And it's going to live. Which one are you going to give the food to first?
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, it's unfortunate, but we human beings don't change until they're under tremendous pain.
Mm-hmm. But, like, I've been in tremendous pain before, and I just don't want to be in that place again. And, I can see that if I keep doing the wrong thing, even if it takes a year from now or 2 years from now, I am not going towards a better, healthier, more positive, you know. And I do get up and down sometimes, and I am medicated for that. And like when I wake up in the morning, I like to be the person who gets up and goes for a run and then has coffee. And I just can't do it right now.
Maybe you're not supposed to be doing it right now. I mean, hell, we started this freaking podcast talking about spiritual crazy shit. Maybe you don't have the bandwidth for that. That's okay. Maybe that's not what you need to push yourself in. Maybe you got to push yourself in a different avenue until you have the strength and the bandwidth and the desire to run again and then have coffee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's okay to take breaks.
It's okay to take breaks. And honestly, my relapse was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Do you know about my relapse? You don't know about relapse?
No.
Well, this is going to be an interesting podcast. So, my relapse. I had been clean and sober for 2 years. And I remember that I had gotten clean and sober. I was in a fellowship, and I did it out of spite because somebody had said to me that there was no way I was going to stay sober or clean. And I said, well, fuck you. I'm going to show you. So I did everything in my power to get clean and sober. And of course, I started noticing differences between me and them. And like, I don't really need to go here. I'm good here. You know, just not doing the routine that I was doing that was helping me stay clean and sober. So it all came to a head one night when, you know, I was triggered. My boyfriend was at work and I was all alone, and I went to see him and I was broke. That was always a trigger. I was broke and I was all alone and I didn't want to go back home. So whenever I don't want to go back home, I know that I'm in a dangerous place. So I went to a bar. And I've been to this bar. Some of my friends were there, and I found some guy to buy me a drink. Oh, wait, no, that was my bottom. That's not when my relapse happened. Okay, which one do you want to hear, the bottom or the relapse? Okay, so this is my bottom, because we're talking about bottoms. So I had, what ended up happening is I drank that night, whatever that guy gave me and whatever I could get. And the last thing I remember is singing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds with the band. And I wasn't part of the band.
Oh.
And then I woke up the next day and I'm like bruised, like my whole thigh is bruised. And I'm like soaking wet. And there's a note on my computer, and it's, you know, I've never been so disrespected in my life. It's my boyfriend whom I lived with. I've never been so disrespected in my life. We're done. We're over, blah, 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 blah. And I get up and I'm like, what happened last night? I was blacking out. I didn't even realize it. And it turns out that I brought another man home to him in a blackout. And this guy was like, do we have an open relationship? And I didn't have sex with anybody, but I was changing my clothes and I wasn't putting my clothes on right. And I was acting like I was some sort of Martha Stewart hostess with the mostess. And I was just being super flirty and crazy, all drunk. And so my boyfriend's like, we're done. And so I had a therapy appointment that day. I couldn't go to therapy. I had lost my wallet, and I wanted to jump into the train tracks. I was going to fuck up everybody's commute. And so I had called a friend who had taken me for help before in the past. And she's like, okay, come on over. I'm going to make you some soup. And we're going to talk, and you don't ever have to feel that way again. And so we found my wallet, and she talked to me, and then she took me to a place to get some help, and I came back home. But in order for me to keep my boyfriend, I had to give him anal sex, because he was like, oh, wait, I kind of did like that. And so prove to me that you love me, and so I want to have anal sex. And then that person then went on to say that he wanted us to be swingers. And by that time I was in recovery, you know, staying clean and sober. And, you know, it was like, okay, do I keep this boyfriend or do I choose my soul? Because there was no way in hell I was going to be a swinger without doing some fucking drugs. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, mm-hmm. I don't know how swingers could swing without cocaine. So I had to make a decision. The pain of losing someone that I think is choosing me over the pain of choosing myself. So that was my bottom. That was the whole spiritual eruption that happened in order for me to, you know, the humiliation, the degradation. Not that I'm saying anything's wrong with anal sex. You know, you don't want anyone to use that against you. You know, just the blank spots.
Mm-hmm.
This horrible thing that happened turned out to be the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because I never, ever, ever want to be that person again.
Mm-hmm.
Where someone can use what I did against me to get what they want. Where I can lose time and behave in a way that is so not like me.
Mm-hmm.
So So a place where I can just be, I'd never want to go back to where I am just all base instinct and not know what's going to happen. I could kill somebody in a blackout. I didn't even know it, you know? Like, I never want to be that person again who has no control and no power.
That's scary,
who could be victim to anybody and anything, or be a perpetrator to anybody and anything. Mm. And so that was my my bottom after my relapse that told me that I needed that, you know, where are you going to go? You're going to go left or you're going to go right? Because if I go left, I'm going to keep getting more moments, you know, where worse things are going to happen, you know, and I was going to lose everything. He was going to move out. I was going to lose my ferret. I was going to lose my apartment. We had just moved out the ghetto because I had been clean and sober and I had a job. I was going to lose my job. I was going to lose my life. I was ready to jump into train tracks. Suicide is a thing for me. So like, you know, and now I know that suicide is a thing for me because of this inherited energies that I had, you know, this constant desire to not be human and be alive. But, you know, and I fed that and I didn't know I was. So this terrible thing that happened had to happen for me to be on the other side. It's only by the grace of some power greater than myself that it didn't mean death or hospitalization or being maimed or sexual assault or physical assault. It's only by a power greater than myself that I got my wallet back. You know? I mean, 8 points of identification.
Yeah. You need your ID.
You know? And that was
so
the bottom.
Powerful, though, to hear, like, you have a bottom, you have this, and that's just a part of your spiritual journey. I mean, even before, you were talking about, you know, your birth mother's, you know, thought process and how it's manifested in your spirituality, even as an adult person, you know, who's been through so much, and for you to be able to recognize that malady on your that malady on your spirit, whatever you consider that, it's incredible.
Well, the spiritual malady is not something that I've created. I've allowed myself to take in information from people who have struggled the way that I've struggled, who have overcome their struggles and are still dealing with their struggles every single day. And so I've listened to them and I've done what they've done, and I've been able to create some new things, and I've been able to replicate some of the things that are not so new. So yeah, when we think about why we use drugs and alcohol, you know, whether we consider ourselves problem users or casual users, I mean, think about it. Why? Because we want to relax. There's something inside us that feels as if we need an outside thing to relax. And to this day, I might have some time away from alcohol and drugs. To this day, I will watch TV like it's nobody's business in order to relax. I am not yet in a place where I can just relax being me. And this is part of the spiritual malady this entire world is facing. We are not okay in our own skin. And some of this is inherited. Some of this is societal. Some of this is socioeconomic. Some of this is just mental health issues. Some of this is not, you know, just not being seen, valued, and heard. Some of this is being a prisoner to a system that's broken.
Yeah.
But we're not okay in our own skin, and we don't understand that we have the power to do so. And that's why I'm on this journey, and I'm trying to share it with people, because I am the girl who literally hated her skin. I'm a dark-skinned black woman. I literally hate my skin. At night, I would try to bleach it when I was a child. And I am getting to a point where I am learning how to be okay in my skin at age 44. I have to say I'm maybe 55% okay in my skin.
Yeah.
So if I'm 55%, like, we're not alone with this struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Not alone at all.
Yeah. I mean, the whole world is suffering, and we all have things, and especially in this society, it's so sick in certain ways, and it spreads to everybody. We're all, you know, like, I mean, you can be like, social media is causing problems for people. We know that. But can I get off of TikTok? I can't. I love it. I love it. I love learning stuff on TikTok. I love, you know, I don't use it all the time like I used to when I first got it. You know, I don't need it like that anymore. But I get into little...
So one thing I totally admire about you is that you'll read a fucking book. So it's okay.
Or listen
to a book. Like, it's okay if you're on TikTok, but you also want to go to the source. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we don't want to use social media as our only means of gaining information and education. So I saw a TikTok about St. Patrick's Day, about how St. Patrick's Day is really a celebration of genocide. And this is my fault. I mentioned it to my friend Bethany. I was like, you know, St. Patrick's Day is a day of genocide. And she's like, stop listening to fake news. No, it's not. Now, I know it is, because what this person was saying is so fucking true that I just needed to go back and look at some, go dig into his resources, and I'd come to the same conclusion. It rings so true.
The British sent, what's his name, over to Ireland?
The Roman Catholic Church sent St. Patrick to Ireland to beat out the snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy said that, you know, when we look at Ireland and its geographic situation, where it's positioned, what type of flora and fauna there, snakes are not indigenous to Ireland. And what the snakes were actually the Gnostics. It was a pagan sect of human beings. And when you think about that whole area,
we used to write on trees.
The Celtics, the pagans, you know, all of those who were not traditionally Christian, right? And at that time, yeah, you're Celtic knots, and
it's
you're
not a knot.
Oh,
it's
what's
a,
this? Ooh,
this is a pre-Christian Irish head. So it's this head that they found. I forget what it's called. The something head, and it was found on a hill, a mountain in Ireland. I mean, there's no mountains in Ireland. They're hills, and they're all green. And it's a three-sided head.
Oh, we got to learn about this.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I saw this when I went to Ireland.
Oh, wow.
I thought, wow.
Did you see any snakes there?
No. But I don't typically buy Christian iconography, because I don't identify with it. So, like, the knots and the this, it's all supposed to represent the Trinity. But I've recently learned, since going to Ireland, that actually threes in Ireland have been around way longer than Christianity.
So, what Christianity has done, it has syncretized. That's syncretize. Syncretize things. So, in order to get the pagans to get on board with them, they took things like bunny rabbits and springtime and connected them with Easter, the rising of the Christ. They took things like the Christmas tree, the Yule log.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Yule is an actual pagan holiday. They took those things, Father Christmas, you know, Saint Nick. They took those things and they made it a part of Christianity in order to say, hey, see, come on over. Before or after, I don't know when, but, you know, in addition to violent means of eradicating belief systems that entertain a more polytheistic ideology.
Mm-hmm.
So the Gnostics were considered the snakes, and he drove them out. And we have to remember, these saints of the Roman Christian, the Roman Catholic, you know, not all of them are like Saint, even Mother Teresa isn't a saint yet, right? They're not all like, you know, like noble. there was a government structure, and in order to get people in line with the government, they used force, they used violence. And so this, any priest that's now a saint that got people on board, they did that by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. Burning witches, burning books, burning, you know, prosecuting men, women, and children if they didn't fall in line. Government and religion were so interwoven. It was the structure of the society. Mm-hmm. So the Knights Templar, you know, they were Christian soldiers. Yeah. I do not know if any of them made it to saint status, but the Knights Templar went to lands that were not their own to try to force people into Christianity and burn relics of Islam, of Judaism, of all these religions that were not of the monotheistic bent, where there's a God, there's a Jesus, which is actually a polytheistic thought. The Trinity is a polytheist. So the three is a sacred number before Christianity, after, and during. Mm-hmm. And they took it and they're like, okay, we're going to run with this. And I'm not saying that Jesus isn't real. I'm not saying that God isn't real. I'm not saying any of that stuff isn't real or valid. What I am saying that these real and valid, beautiful things have been corrupted mm-hmm. by humans.
Yeah.
And humans need to control other humans.
Constantly.
Yeah. Don't get me started.
But it's funny. They talk about God. Like, there's stories in the Bible mm-hmm. where, okay, like, let's say the ancient Israelites, or I guess they're Israelites at that time, yeah. They cried to God. There's a story that they need a king. They need a king. And God said, well, I'm your king. And then he gave them, I guess Saul comes first. I think that he gave them King Saul and then King David. And anyway, but they ended up rebelling against those things too. You know what I mean? So they called for a king mm-hmm. and then
they weren't happy with the kings they got.
Yeah. So it's like people almost like want to be controlled and then are being controlled. Like, I feel like there's a give and take to it. Like, there are people who want to be told what to do. They want to be controlled. They don't want to think about life. They don't want to make decisions. There are a lot of people like that.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't always have people who are leaders. You need some people who will follow.
But then there's this whole idea where, why does it have to be a lead and a follow? You are a leader when you follow as well. You know, there is. So part of, and I'm not trying to bash religion, but part of our human psyche is constantly making differences inferior or superior to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing wrong with black, and there's nothing wrong with white. There's nothing wrong with left, and there's nothing wrong with right. You know, like, for some reason, we need to have a better and a worse. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes us safe. And it's until we can be okay with knowing that it's a lateral, like, it's all on a continuum. Everything is on a continuum. You know, we're going to constantly brush up against contrast and then fight contrast because we need it mm-hmm. to be. We need stark difference. We need to know
where we stand.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause standing on the continuum is,
and then trying to get to a better place.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking about that today on my way home from work, and I'm like, why can't I just enjoy the place that I'm at? Why am I not able to do that? Look around you. Like, I talk to myself, like, Megan, look around you. You. It's a beautiful day outside. You got to do this today. That's not bad. Your life is not bad, but I will make up things.
So that's when you were talking about, well, I don't have the spirit, I don't have spirituality, whatever. I was trying to lead to this. You do. You have to choose. And I know from experience that the more I have to choose, the more uncomfortable I am. And so part of what I do is I've chosen to be in constant contact with powers greater than myself. I made that decision. And so as a result, I make choices that lead me to be in more contact with them. If you haven't made that decision, then you're not going to get that result. And so there's a lot of little decisions we make along the way before we get to that. So what I would say to you is I would choose to notice, like I'm choosing to notice when I'm picking on the things in my life. I'm like picking out a scab.
Mm-hmm. I'm picking at my nails right now because I'm going to put new ones on later or tomorrow.
I'm going to notice the things I'm making up in my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to notice them, take them in like data, zeros and ones. I'm not going to use them to harm myself. I'm taking in information so I know where I am. I know what I'm about. This is what I do with my clients. And so when you start to notice the things that you do, then you get to ask yourself, how does it make you feel? And then after you're aware of how the things that you're choosing make you feel, you can make a decision about whether or not you want to do them still. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds pretty simplistic and easy. It sounds simple, but it is a little complicated because it means we have to choose to be aware more times than not. But when you are ready, you will. And sometimes you have to ask. You have to be like, I'm ready to take the next step. What is that next step? Show me what it is because I'm ready to explore it. That's enough. Or I'm ready to entertain the steps. Whoever fucking out there, you know.
Perhaps I'm ready.
Perhaps.
I might be.
It sounds like you're in a place of pre-contemplation of some other choices. And that's all right, you know?
I certainly am. I'm all over the place. You saw when we started today, I had these wires everywhere and I was like, mm-hmm. So this week I wanted to talk to you about these, I'm pulling out tarot cards.
Yes, please.
I wanted to tell you that I got yesterday, I think it was the Six of Cups and it was Six of Wands. It was reverse. So it was like people in a boat. And it was upside down. It was, like, about being stuck. And then today I got the Ten of Swords. And that is, like, a person laying on the ground with swords all in the back. You know the card, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be fun, since last week we picked cards, if we just pick a card each.
Sure. We can do that.
Okay. I don't know how much I'm supposed to shuffle. Are there rules?
Until it feels good to stop.
I never know. I'm always like, does it feel good? Am I telling myself?
And I tell you that my oracle cards brought me to spirituality. So I would not be surprised if your tarot deck brings you towards more spirituality.
The Chariot.
What is the Chariot? Let me look at that.
Oh, and I see another card on the back by accident because I...
Queen of Wands?
The King of Wands.
King of Wands. Let's see, the Chariot. Am I going to choose a card too?
Yeah.
Let's see. What is that, a spindle or a top? Because I know the imagery on the card is important.
Well, I know it's two sphinxes and like black and a white one or a yellow mm-hmm. and a black one or something.
Yeah, black and a white sphinx with a red wheel. It could be a wheel on a shield with a yellow sun and blue wings with a person, it could be man or woman, with a crown with stars surrounded by starry curtains holding a scepter or a wand, and they look pretty regal. In the background there's what looks like a kingdom.
Triumph over obstacles in all forms, whether ill health, financial, etc. This is a card of victory. The aspects for travel are beautiful. Your efforts will pay dividends. Success comes through application of oneself. The task falls to you alone. This is one card that in the major arcana that foretells immediate victory to seeker.
So, hello, victorious. You're gonna be victorious. So stop fucking worrying already.
Well, I don't know. Let's see. The King of Wands.
Oh my God. Just stop fucking worrying. Just let it ride. Let that sink
in. Let it ride. Like
you're gonna be victorious. Just, you know, let that sink in.
Go ahead and shuffle.
Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle.
You're so good at shuffling. Well, are you used
I should
to doing
be.
It?
I should be. I work with the cards every freaking
I love it.
Day if I can. I mean, provided I have.
No, I love this stuff. I remember when you did my cards, Mel. And I forget what the first card I pulled was, but it was some serious shit.
Yes, when you're ready for a follow-up reading, let me know. Three of Swords.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Look at that.
Mm-hmm. My heart is skewered by three swords. And it's rainy. There are clouds, and it looks like it could be rain. And it looks as if it's saying that there are three elements that are imbuing me, my psyche, and it's okay. You know, it's a little uncomfortable, but it needs to happen.
Can I read you?
Yeah, because I'm going to pick another one because that's kind of creepy. Oh, and I knew this was going to come. I was like, I want to get a major arcana card of a woman.
The Empress.
And then the Empress is right behind. I pulled the Empress. So read the Empress and this one. What's the three hearts? The three swords.
The three of hearts.
Three swords.
Three of hearts. I know.
Two hearts to beat as one.
Three swords. I have to read it like that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Indicates that things are not going well in your personal life and foretells a problem arising in the near future. Mm-hmm. Be prepared for emotional upset, arguments, and quarreling.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the Three of Swords shows the end of a close relationship, be it platonic or sexual. Or this card may herald temporary short separation from a partner. If this card gets to wider circumstances, the Three of Swords tells disarray on larger either civil or political strife. In the worst case scenario, the threats can even mean a war is coming.
So for me, definitely is not inaccurate. double negatives. Wow. So, you know, I am separated. Well, I'm emotionally and spiritually separated from him. We are still physically connected because I live with him. And, you know, I'm never really home. So, you know, it could mean that that stuff's going well. It could mean that we're going to have another upheaval, another fight. It could mean that I might be given an opportunity to move somewhere and get out of there sooner than I thought. You know, we talked before. You were like, you need to move. And so I'm just waiting for spirit to show the right opportunity for me. And so to kind of just know that part, that strife could be coming between us, if not other people in my life, which I would prefer not. Let him be the one that's going to be the problem.
Yeah.
That I can be prepared so I can try to be my best self. when and if we encounter conflict. So, but what about the Empress?
Okay, the Empress, a little more puff. Wealth, abundance, fertility, growth, motherhood, pregnancy, physical creativity. You're going to create something.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are creative by nature, such as artists and sculptors, the Empress represents truly fertile imagination, producing items of great beauty. For those who work the land, such as horticulturalists, farmers, or gardeners, the Empress represents nature's abundance, the pleasures of the earth. For the very young amongst us, promises a secure and fertile future.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense because my relationship does weigh heavily on me. You know, when I go back home and I have to go sleep, like, it's difficult. Sleep until he gets up, and he gets up at 4 a.m., and then I can go to sleep.
Mm.
You know, I don't cook in my kitchen until late at night. That's when his mom is in her room, and he's probably going to bed. Like, I'm not comfortable there.
You're avoiding the people who
I'm
live
avoiding.
There.
I'm totally avoiding. I know that I need to do some packing, and so I know when I start moving things around and I pack, he's not going to like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it is what it is. In order for me to separate, so I can be me, do the best that I need to do for my Empress mission. Like, that's not surprising. And it's not surprising that it's going to come up to the forefront. I've had a little bit of a reprieve, so it seems about time for us to probably get into a fight. Probably.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I have to say, thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation, and I always love talking to you, and I did miss you last week, and I'm glad we're back at it.
So, me too. I am super glad that we're doing this. It gets me an opportunity to plug some things like my blog, Enlightened with Mel, on Substack. That's Enlightened with Mel on Substack, as well as I forget what else I'm doing. I'm working on some ebooks. I'm trying to do it all. Yeah. So keep your eyes and ears open.
You're out there. Follow on the socials. Follow on the blogs.
Yeah. Oh.
Give Mel some love.
Or not. It's okay. I know you love me anyway.
And if you are out there listening, check out the cool paper dolls that I made.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And we do need to put the podcast on Substack.
We need to put it on Substack, and we'll get it out there.
And my website, once I get that up and running. And there's so much. There's so many things.
So for the handful out there that do listen, get it, you know, spread the word.
Share, like, comment. Later.